The Contenders is a proud member of the Cage Club Podcast Network.
For other great shows about movies and pop culture, go visit cageclub.me. That's cageclub.me.
One more fight and you're expelled.
You want to be a boxer?
White out aerobics.
Am I talking to you?
No girl has what it takes to be a boxer.
There's plenty of things you could do better with your life than box.
Prove it.
Welcome to The Contenders, the show about the movies made by and starring women who refuse to play by the rules. I'm Aislinn Addington.
And I am Tobin Addington. And today we get to talk about a movie that is both directed by a woman who refuses to play by the rules, starring a woman who refuses to play by the rules, and about a character who refuses to play by the rules. We're going to talk about Girl Fight today from 2000.
Amazing.
What do you remember about the first time you saw this or when you became aware of this movie?
Oh my goodness, so many things. First, real quick, I could tell you were going to do like a rule of three with that. And I was so hoping that I was going to be the third woman who refuses to play by the rules. Oh. But it's okay. We can save that for another time. Okay. Tobin, you pointed this movie out to me and told me I needed to see it. And I can't quite recall if the first time I saw it, we saw it together, or if I just saw it. And then I created a group date with many of my lady friends from high school, and we had girls' night girl fight, as I called it.
Oh, nice.
And we went to the mall and had dinner at the – well, we didn't really have a food court at our mall, but we had dinner at the mall, and we each donated $10 and did a Secret Santa. So we all bought something for someone else, and then we went as a group of six or eight people to go see this movie. And I had already seen it once, but I thought it was so important that we all go because there were so many things that I loved about it. So I remember seeing it at least twice in the theater, and then took my VHS copy to college and tried to get as many people to watch it as I could. How about you?
So I would have seen this movie in college. And I also can't remember. I feel like we saw it together.
I know we've seen it together.
I just don't remember. I can't remember the order of things. So I watched it, I think, many times. I remember going to it at the little independent theater that you could walk to from my college campus, which was amazing. And I saw a lot of great movies that way. And then I had maybe a VHS and then a DVD. And I've lost them. I've lost the DVD along the way, which makes me very sad. But I really loved this movie and hadn't seen it probably since like 2001. I mean, I watched it a lot those first couple of years. Then I don't think I've seen it for the last like 17 years. So it was, I know. And I was surprised by how much I remembered as it went. Like this movie is buried pretty deep in my brain. And I'm not sad about that. I'm excited to get into it, but I think this is maybe a great movie.
I do too. I mean, this is a bit of a ringer for us, but also kind of like The Contender, our first episode and our namesake. It is a movie that we have talked about for years and have talked about the gender politics of it for years, and so it seems appropriate.
Yeah, it really does. It feels very much on brand for us. And I'm wondering how many of our listeners have seen this movie, because I don't think it gets referenced a lot. I don't hear it brought up in conversation very much. And it's I'll be curious to see if those of you out there who are listening to this, if you've seen it before watching it for this, we'd love to hear from you as you hear this episode. So can I give you a couple bits of film history?
We'd love it.
So this is the directorial debut of Karen Kusama. And Karen Kusama is a filmmaker who is, like a lot of women filmmakers, has talked about the difficulty she has had getting projects made. So there are other filmmakers who sort of broke out in the late 1990s, early 2000s, who were able to make a lot of movies, you know, making a movie a year, every 2 years. And And because of the kind of films that she makes and the integrity with which she makes a lot of her films, she, as with many women filmmakers over the years, has not been able to make as many movies as she probably should have. But this is her, talk about a debut. Like this is a movie that sort of launches a director out of a gate. And the second bit is that this is a movie that launches a star out of the gate. This is Michelle Rodriguez's first debut. And as I've read about it, it was her first audition ever was for this role. Yeah. So
and, I mean, just made for her.
Made for her. Yeah. And so a feature performance by an actor who totally embodies the part, and by a director who's sort of coming out swinging, if I can start the boxing puns. but yeah, so that's sort of all I could find. It's a very modest budget, just $1 million to make this movie. And boy, they put it all into the character. So those are our two bits.
I was going to ask you about that. I wondered if the $1 million was going to be part of your film history. Can you contextualize for us a little bit? So if this was made in 2000, how much of a tiny movie was $1 million? $1 million
is a very tiny movie because this is before the digital video revolution had really sort of taken over. We're far from an iPhone, where people can shoot a whole movie on their sort of pocket computer. But even regular digital video cameras were not, which are cheaper to shoot with. You weren't shooting features that way. So they're shooting this on film, and to make this kind of movie with this sort of number of locations and actors and the time that this movie takes, and it's going to cost money. So they're cutting as many corners as they can. When I was in film school, my memory is that in the independent world, there was you either made movies for like under $1 million or over $10 million, and that was sort of hard to sort of, because you either had to have big stars, and so you had to pay them a lot more money to make movies that cost a lot of money, right? So like suddenly you get Leonardo DiCaprio wants to make American Psycho, and the budget goes from whatever, however million it was, to like $15 million, because now you've got a star in it and people are willing to pay more, give you more money, right? Because more people are going to come see it. So it's a tiny amount of money. And they went to a lot of places to get the money and ended up finally getting it from a independent filmmaker and sort of film guru named John Sayles. Aislinn, you and I, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I love John Sayles.
We also from this era, we watched a number of John Sayles movies. And so he and Maggie Renzi, who I can't remember if she was his romantic, they're romantic related, or if they're just producing partners, but they and I think IFC, Independent Film Channel, ponied up the money to make this movie. So there were a lot of no's before they found a yes, and $1 million is not a lot of money to make this movie in 2000.
Thank you for that. Weird example though, because is Leonardo DiCaprio in American Psycho?
No, so Mary Harron, and maybe we'll have to do American Psycho sometime. Mary Harron was going to make the movie American Psycho, and she had Christian Bale attached, and then Leonardo DiCaprio wanted to make it. And so then the producers were like, oh, of course, we have to have Leo, and they ditched Christian Bale. And then Leo's like, this may be a little rough for me, the way you want to make, a little out there. But there was a whole thing about they were even talked about ditching the filmmaker and keeping Leonardo DiCaprio, because he wanted to do it.
That happens all the time.
So
sorry, that was an aside, just because as a in a previous life being a Christian Bale historian, yes, as I was confused.
Yes. For a brief window in between it being Christian Bale, it was Leonardo DiCaprio.
Interesting. All right, well, enough of this sausage party. Let's talk about the ladies involved in this movie.
Let's do it.
Writer director Karen Kusama. Actor Michelle Rodriguez. Producers, Sarah Green, Martha Griffin, Caroline Kaplan, and Maggie Renzi. And editor, Plummy Tucker.
Now, Plummy Tucker
was my new favorite name.
Plummy Tucker was John Sayles' editor for a long time and edited the movie Limbo that you and I think are the only people who love that movie.
Shout us out on Twitter if you also love Limbo. David Strathairn, Mary Liz with Master Antonio singing that soundtrack.
Yes.
You are the only people who bought that soundtrack.
I know. I know it's true.
It's a good one. Oh, gosh. I could just sit in this car on memory lane with you, but we need to talk about this movie.
We should, yeah.
I would love to hear a Tobin plot summary for Girl Fight.
All right. Michelle Rodriguez plays Diana Guzman, a tough-as-nails Brooklyn teenager who sets out to train to become a boxer in defiance of her father, the male-dominated boxing world, and everyone's expectations of who she's supposed to be. But finding herself in the ring will push Diana far beyond her comfort zone as she learns to channel her aggression, take constructive criticism, and find the champion hidden within.
I love this movie.
I love this movie so much.
This is such a good movie.
I forgot how much I love this movie.
So tell me if you had the same reaction I did, okay. Because I was like, okay, I'm going to watch Girl Fight. I know I love it, but it's been a long time. So there was a little bit of like, ugh, now I have to take notes and just kind of psyching myself up. And then the opening shot.
Yes.
On her face when she looks up like through her eyelashes. I out loud was like, oh, I love this movie. I forgot how much I love the opening shot and I loved her in this. I mean, we all know Michelle Rodriguez now, but I just feel like you knew from the minute you read, you know, a sentence about this movie was about to come out. Like you called that shot that Michelle Rodriguez is something. Mm-hmm. And you were right. She's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And frightening.
Yeah.
And gorgeous.
Yes.
And raw and all those things.
And unapologetic in all of those things. And yeah, there are two things I've always remembered about this movie, even though I couldn't remember, is it as good as I remember? But I remembered the sound of the opening shot, that like clapping sound, like there's this percussion sound. And then, and he's like moving into her like body. I don't know how to say it, like into this like torso shot of her in her like military jacket in the hallway. And then the face, like those two things, the sound and the visuals. I just remember that in my head being like, oh, this is an introduction. It blew my hair back this time. Like, you know, every actor should dream of once in their career having an introduction like this. I mean, it is so, and I think it really does announce both of them. This is a filmmaker who's going to shoot this movie in a very different, specific way, and an actor who's going to just sort of chew into this part. I also think of you as she looks over her eyelashes because of your penchant to do that as a child. When
my hairy eyebrow. But as they called it?
Hairy eyeball.
Hairy eyeball. That's what they called it. Yep.
Yeah.
I still do that.
My daughter does that too.
I was just going to say, and you know who I've seen do it in the past couple of years?
Yep.
So proud.
I sort of love that image in other ways too. But if nothing else, this announces that this movie is going to sort of look and feel and sound different than maybe you expected the quote unquote girls boxing movie, which is how sometimes it was described, was going to feel.
Well, and I thought about too a couple times while watching this that this was, you know, long before, or at least I would say significantly before Million Dollar Baby, which, I mean, obviously is a very different movie, but I don't know. There's just something about like, oh, this for me. I apologize. I am sorry, Clint. But like, I was like, oh, this is the real women's boxing movie. Just because that I feel like is the euthanasia movie. So you know,
spoiler alert.
Oh, apologies.
I'm kidding. I'm kidding. It's 14 years since that movie came out. Apologies.
and no disrespect to that woman.
Hillary Swank.
Hillary, fucking swank. You know, both of them did a great job, but this certainly is the, okay. This also breaks, some rules for me.
Mm-hmm.
If you know me, you know, I don't like fighting movies. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't like fighting, period. But I don't go to a movie that has a lot of physical combat in it. I don't enjoy it. I don't like the sounds of it. But I make exceptions when the, I think when the significance of the gender stuff, to use a, you know, academic term, gender stuff.
Yes, yes.
you know,
PhD folks.
hits that threshold. So in the same, in a similar way of Haywire that I was excited to go see, because how many, you know, amazing assassin movies are there with male protagonists? I want to see a different take on it. Mm-hmm. And so I feel very similarly about this. And also because I've seen it so much now, I was very calm during most of the boxing pieces of it. Which is not common for me. I think I winced the first shot to her against the lockers, and then she almost immediately starts a fight with a girl in high school. And like that made me wince. But the boxing stuff didn't. And I think part of that, just to get like right in it, had to do with the Hector character.
Mm-hmm.
As the at first reluctant coach, trainer. But I remarked in my notes that, you know, he has high expectations, but he engages with her in a way that none of the other adults that we've seen do. There are a couple of those standard high school, you know, piece of a lecture panning across the room scenes. And, you know, I always enjoy looking at extras in those shots. But in addition to illustrating that Diana's mind was somewhere else, I also felt like it was illustrating that kind of nothing is really, no one is engaging with her.
Right.
Everyone is talking at her. Mm. Her dad, the teachers, the guidance counselor, who may have been saying great things, but she just wasn't, they weren't meeting her where she was.
Mm-hmm.
And Hector seemed to have a real gift for that with her. And maybe not as much with others. You know, we know that other fighters had trained with him and then left. And so I think that was just a beautiful partnership in her training. And I loved that character and how much they grew to trust each other and learn from each other and all that. So, yay, Hector.
Yeah, totally. Like you, I have a thing about – so I like physical combat movies, but I don't like boxing movies. I was just talking to somebody about this. I forget what they were recommending to me, and I was responding to them like, yeah, that sounds good, but I just don't really do boxing movies. Like, I like the sort of acrobatics of something like Haywire, or, you know, like fisticuffs, but like two people in a ring just beating each other senseless with gloves
and
on.
There's
like,
so much bodily fluids for me.
And you know, I respect
too much DNA.
I respect Raging Bull. I think Thelma Schumacher's editing on that movie is phenomenal. But I'm not going to watch it very often. This movie, though, I will watch. Now that I've revisited it and reaffirmed my love for it, I'm definitely going to watch this again. One of the things that I love so much about it, and this gets to your point about Hector, is that unlike Whippet, which we talked about last time, this is a movie where she really has to work to get better at boxing. It's not just that she has a moment where you know, she just digs deeper and then is suddenly good. Like there, it takes her a long time to get used to the speed bag. There are three or four either scenes or just little bits of scenes inside montages of her trying to get the rhythm of that. And Hector has to use a lot of different kinds of techniques. Like you really see the coaching work and the athletes work and their work together. And I think I find that so much more rewarding You know, I'm not a boxer, but I'm a creative person, and the work that goes into the creative work is a different kind of work, but a similar kind of thing where you have to work really hard and you have to put in all the hours and you have to try different things to different techniques, and you have to have mentors that you can listen, like all of that stuff. I really admire a movie that puts in the time that makes the character go through the enough that you believe that they really are getting better. Better, both internally and externally.
Oh, that's a really great point. I like the parallels from the road to excellence is the specific task looks different, but the time, the 10,000 hours, if you will.
Right. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Work. I lost what I was gonna say next. Oh yeah. Her getting better. I remarked in my notes that, there were multiple montages,
mm-hmm.
right? So she has like the first training montage, and then there's like a second one later, and then a third one preparing for kind of the last thing, but I didn't find them overly cheesy. And I mean, I love a cheesy montage, but I don't know. I liked that they broke it up that way mm-hmm. versus mm-hmm. having kind of that miraculous, suddenly she's amazing. And so right. I agree with you there that we get to go on this journey with her that is grueling, and we see it. Mm-hmm. I also love a movie where people wear the same clothes.
Mm.
And I don't want to get into it, but a great example is Good Will Hunting.
Mm-hmm.
Where you yeah. see him wear the same clothes over and over. And so I appreciated that here, that there's often, and maybe it's in part because it is a very small budget. And so it helps when you change the order of things yeah. in editing. You don't have to reshoot because she only has three shirts or what
right,
have you.
Right.
But I just think it makes such a more authentic character. And in this case was, vital to us seeing the work she puts in. You have to see the sweat and the dirty clothes and the, the same, kind of this, it's mm-hmm. a manifestation of the strife she's coming from, I think.
Right.
And I liked that. Real quick, I am not a Rocky expert. However,
go ahead.
Mm-hmm. I love that in this movie, the boy's name is Adrian.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't think I got that the first time. And by the first time, I mean like the first era that I watched this movie.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
this time, as I think I was even just reading like the Amazon summary before I watched it. And I giggled out loud. It's like, oh, that's clever. That's fun. I like it. And I don't yeah. know the nature of Rocky's relationship with Adrian. I don't know. I don't care. Mm-hmm. No offense, Sly. Although I would watch Rocky Balboa because of Milo Ventimiglia, but that is a different podcast.
Coming soon.
Hi-ho, Milo, if you will. but I just, if we're going to play with gender, I liked that. I don't know. I felt like it was a wink, and I like a good wink.
That reminds me, that is, so it was with Joey of the Cage Club co-founder, Joey Lewandowski is who was, he had written on Twitter, he'd ranked, having seen Creed 2, he ranked all the Rocky movies. And I responded saying, I've not seen any of these movies. And there was a lot of sort of chagrin and outrage from various corners of the Cage Club family. And that's where I realized that the reason is just, I just don't like boxing movies. I would like to see Creed. I'd like to see the Creed movie. But other than that, I got nothing. They got nothing for me. This is my boxing movie right here.
Yeah. Amen. This is all, I think this is all we need.
Yeah. Yeah.
The movie starts off with the close up on her face.
Mm-hmm.
And so then just to jump quickly to the middle of the movie,
yeah.
she goes to a professional fight. And that's I think, a significant moment with Hector that he invites her to go.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed she spends a lot of the movie, when I say asking questions, but like questioning invitations, or she's confident. And yet there's a lot of, where do I belong? Mm-hmm. That then right. at the very end, she's all answers. And I right. love that.
That's a great point. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Totally.
And Adrian's all questions, but that's another thing. But so she's at this professional fight, and that I think that was the first sincere smile we had the whole time, because it starts on her face and it's that grimace.
Yeah,
and
she's not smiling. Yeah.
No, and then early on, conversations with her dad and his friends, and then she has to kind of go through this gauntlet of old boxing trainers to get to Hector and to get that start. And so there's just a lot of clenching her jaw, which she does beautifully. Mm-hmm. But then she's there and she's watching this happen, and the way that she lights up, I was also a great, I don't know. She gives good face in this movie.
Yeah, she really does. Yeah.
But
she holds a close up.
Yeah, as an act, I mean, I think it's it demonstrates her capacity as an actor. Mm-hmm. And
some range too, as that smile breaks and she's really discovering something about herself and about the world in that moment. That's going to, you know, she sees sort of some possibility or something there. And the feeling in my body when that smile comes, like everything kind of lifts, you know, like floats a little bit. Like, I don't know, that there's some relief for her from some of the stuff that she deals with. That's what I got in that moment. There's so many good shots in this movie. That's, you know, the filmmaking feels a little bit like a filmmaker who feels like, this might be my only shot, so I'm gonna like invest in every moment. And there's a great shot early in the movie when she's at one of her first training sessions, and it's her. It's gonna sound a little cheesy as I describe it, but it's her reflection in a cracked mirror. But it really does speak to me about her character at that moment and how fractured her kind of existence is between, you know, her she's having to steal the money to get trained. She's had to talk Hector into it. He'll only do it if she pays. She has to kind of steal money from her dad because she knows that he won't give it to her. And so she's like living these multiple lives, trying to figure out who she's going to be. And that there's so many times where it feels like the shots, like that one that you describe watching the fight, sort of crystallize who she is. Like then no longer is she like refracted through a cracked mirror in that moment. It's just here, it's her under the lights, and she's like finding something.
So deep. I love it. So true. So deep. So true. So she finds Hector and this gym because she goes to, her dad sends her to pick up her younger brother who is training there. Let's talk about Tiny for a minute, because I kept saying throughout the whole movie this time, poor Tiny. Like, what's Tiny going to do? Just get out, Tiny. Get out.
Yeah.
He's great, and he's been in a lot of stuff.
Yeah, he's recognizable, yeah.
And I think, you know, does a great job as this like poor kid. I mean, I don't know. Part of me wants to see the version of the movie through just his perspective. But I don't know. I don't have a lot, just poor Tiny and because he's sort of she's a misfit who finds a path. And we understand that Tiny is an artist and creative and a self-proclaimed geek or dork, I forget. But I don't know. I mean, there wasn't space for it in this movie, and that's fine. But like my, you know, on the ride home from the movie theater, hope is that Tiny does find his version of what Diana finds.
Right.
And they do, you know, they do reconcile, toward the end, and he's there to support her, which is amazing. But I just think, oh man, poor Tiny.
Yeah. Art is his thing, right? He wants to go to art school. That's his thing. And his passion. And I don't know. It feels like she will, her example or something will, I like to have hope that he will find his way to his dreams too.
Yeah. And then there's the dad. Who obviously I'm going to have a lot of trouble with, and I think we're supposed to. But just invalidating both of his kids in different ways.
Yeah.
Throughout the movie.
Yeah. Talk about not seeing other characters. Right? He doesn't see them at all. Yeah.
Or, and I think it's a combination of, I think it's willfully, mm-hmm. I don't think it's just ignoring. I think it's, he has a lot of something. He has a lot of baggage around mm-hmm. the mother of his children committing suicide.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then, it's alluded to a couple of times, and then very much toward the end, a discussion of him having been abusive to her.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I while I have hope for Tiny, I don't know that he's going to make it out of that and his mm-hmm. demons with that. But what did you think of that violent confrontation in the kitchen between Diana and her dad near the end of the movie?
Yeah. The dad character for me, the home stuff doesn't play, has never played as well for me as other parts of the movie. Hmm. And I don't know that it's not bad at all, but it feels some of it feels a little kind of expected, where mm-hmm. the other parts feel a little bit less expected. I'm not sure I can put my finger on it any more discreetly than that, but it moment feels like a moment that the movie needs to have. Mm-hmm. And watching with today's eyes, I know this movie is all about characters who are trapped and trying to break out of whatever their circumstances are and end up sort of in the dad's case, passing along their own frustrations about that onto their kids, or forcing them onto their kids, or, forcing them to do things because they think that's what needs to be done or whatever. Like but I don't find him. I wonder if the movie wants us to feel a little bit more sympathetic toward him, and I don't know that I do.
Yeah. Oh no, certainly. I don't, he doesn't show any remorse for me. And so that,
oh yeah,
doesn't get me to a place of compassion as quickly. Not that you have to, but I think a couple of things. I think there's, love this movie.
But
I think it leans towards some tropiness, mm-hmm. that's a word I just made up, in the way that Hector has daughters that he doesn't see. And then mm-hmm. Diana comes into his life and he's more proud of her than he's been of anyone. Mm-hmm. And Diana is at home with an abusive father who she blames for her mother being gone and doesn't connect with and all that. And so they kind of, in their coaching relationship, forge some kind of, they both have a need for each other that they and so I think it's subtle enough that it doesn't bother me. I think if they pointed at it, I would say that's too on the nose, but I mean, I think it works.
Totally.
I don't like, just for the record, in case anyone's confused, I am vehemently anti-violence, mm-hmm. and particularly domestic violence. So let's just mm-hmm. put that out there.
Stipulated.
Thank you. That being said, I think the intensity of that scene and the really kind of mm-hmm. raw violence of it, mm-hmm. is evocative and is not expected. I would expect it to be the thing where he slaps her across the face and she says something, declaring him a monster, and then leaves. Like mm-hmm, that's what mm-hmm. I think the $30 million dollar version would do.
Absolutely.
Or Tiny stands up or something. But that she, because we know that she has impulse control issues and anger issues. Like we're led to believe she has a history of violence, if you will. And so yes. To me, it tracks that she would finally lose it in that way, or mm-hmm. lose her composure and, mm-hmm. and get to a place where she is truly hurting him now that she has the skills to do it.
Right.
As much as I don't like to see it, I don't want to see it. It's not a solution. I think it's brave to go that far with it, because she is our protagonist. And I don't know.
Yeah. It's a great point. And this is something that is a hallmark of some of Karen Kusama's best work, is a fearlessness in terms of, story warranted violence. Again, not sort of warranted necessarily in real life, or, you know, I'm not making any sort of claims that way, but in terms of the when violence is feels appropriate to the character, it being very kind of visceral and feeling very real. Like she made this movie, The Invitation, a couple of years ago, that has some of that. The best parts, as I remember it, of Jennifer's Body, which is another movie that she directed, which we'll talk about someday.
I was going to say, it's on our list somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. She got this new movie with Nicole Kidman that's where she plays a detective and is very kind of stripped down and, like, you know, it looks like a pretty rough movie called Destroyer. But she's sort of unafraid to go to those dark places and to take female protagonists to them and, let them loose in a way. What's interesting to me also about that scene is that she's learning with Hector about fighting within the rules, within the boundaries of the ring, and that this is having to sort of combine the skills that she's learning there, and like the fact that she's grown past her father in some of these kind of ways, with the kind of fighting that she was doing at the beginning of the movie, that's more like it feels kind of integrated into her life in a way. At least that's how kind of I read it metaphorically, that she's like combining these two parts of herself in some way in that scene, fighting outside
that's
the rules.
That's fancier than I thought about it.
Well, yeah, I don't know about fancy.
Let's talk about Adrian a little more.
Yeah. Okay. I'm so curious how you feel about this. Yeah. So tell me how you felt about Adrian.
Well, I did write in my notes, good front stoop kissing. There's some good kissing in this movie.
Uh-huh.
And
uh-huh.
I love good kissing.
You do.
Oh, Adrian. I kind of it makes me think of pedantic elders who say things like, "Oh yeah, he was an okay first boyfriend." You know, like I see any sort of happily ever after or any of that with Adrian, which is fine. Yeah. Absolutely, I think I think what the character does really well is demonstrates that insecurity and that masculinity so fragile kind of attitude, that he can be intrigued by her and kind of respect her up until the point that it interferes with his life. And then he has to, decide whether he's going to move through that or go do something easier that doesn't challenge him.
Right.
And I think he tries, his coach is much more misogynistic and chauvinistic than Hector. I don't know that we know the name of his coach, but one quote I wrote down was, this equality shit has gone too far or something, because they announced a gender blind amateur boxing. I mean, it's just sort of like, oh man.
Yeah, you think this is too far?
If your world is that tiny, I bet that is upsetting.
Yes.
And he also says that thing, that defense that we still hear people use of like, well, men and women are just different. Uh-huh. Why can't we say that? And my answer is, of course we're different. And you can say that. It's the value you're placing on that difference.
Right. Right.
That ruins the world. So like, yeah, I get that I am not identical to, another gender in any, whatever gender that is. Also, of course, quite binary, but that's okay. It's 2000. We'll let it be where it was.
It can't be everything.
I know. And I certainly didn't expect it to be.
I'm echoing you. Yeah.
But I can't imagine what that guy has to say about
living in today's world,
identity versus expression and all those things. But so I think he's, getting fed this sort of status quo messages And I believe he makes effort to figure it out a little bit. I think when he shows up at the high school, that did say something to me, and I'm glad that Diana gave him the business for it a little bit. And I also thought, okay, yeah, I mean, she heard him out and she made a choice, and her choice is to move forward with him like that. Great. That's her, you know, that's her choice.
Yeah.
I think she could have also easily said, you know, buzz off, or whatever she would have said.
Yeah.
You know, the, when they fight together, and she wins and he says satisfied, that to me was like, oh wait, you are super douchey. And we're done here. But again, then he kind of comes crawling back. So I appreciate that he has the strength of character to realize that he reacted poorly and want to try again. I just wonder how many more times he's going to do that before she just doesn't have the time or energy.
Yeah, probably not.
That was long-winded. I apologize. What do you think about Adrian?
I feel very, very similar to the way you feel. If I could build on it a little bit, I think that I appreciate too that he has that he is wrestling with it in some way. And I really like the scenes of them together. There's a scene where he sneaks her into his house, like they're into the apartment, right? And he's like, my parents are light sleepers or whatever. And they go to his room. And then I like the way that the movie deals with their the development of their intimacy. And it feels like a movie that is being kind of realistic about that in some way, you know, in terms of the two steps forward, one step back, like, you know, sort of opening up to one another, feeling each other out, feeling each other up, that builds. I think, I appreciate the love interest in this movie, the way that it's being used, right? Not every movie needs one. This doesn't feel to me shoehorned in. It feels like part and parcel of how the world is reacting to her and the way she's trying to change her life. And we see what that does to him and the battle that it begins within him from the way he's coached, the way he's been raised versus what she's kind of like bringing to the table. And I think he's really useful there, but I agree. I don't think this is not a long-term, I don't see them go in the distance, but you know, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. Like it works. It works absolutely. For this high school love. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think if he were, okay, tell me if this sounds terrible. I think if he were uber supportive, it would be kind of out of character or out of the kind of like you and I have talked about the Help and the Emma Stone character. Mm-hmm. And it's like, wait, why does she have this perspective in this
era?
Yeah. How does that play? And so I agree with you. I think he's useful for the movie. And I think it's, you know, it is just true. If you're the new kid in town somewhere, people are going to be intrigued and want to try to figure you out. And
right.
And that's what they're, you know, doing with each other. And you know, most relationships don't go the distance. Sorry, spoiler alert.
Right.
Just one. I don't know. There are just so many things I liked about it. I mean, I think we've hit a lot of the big things, but I do like, so, you know, outside of the montages of it all, early on, Hector says, run 3 miles a couple times a week or whatever. And you see her do it and have difficulty. And then toward the end of the movie, there's this great little scene in an, what looks like an all women's gym class where it's time for the presidential physical fitness test. And she's been training for however many months and just like smokes everybody else. And and I just love that as an example of how she's found something that she loves to do. And that then just kind of makes other things click as well. And there, it's alluded to when Marisol is braiding her hair that she's got school under control now. And I don't know if that's just about the fighting. It sounded like it was a little more like, you know, she's able to get work done. And so, I just kind of love that as a silly illustration of how far she's come, that she's even participating and trying and then dominating running the mile.
Yeah.
As we all recall running the mile, although yeah. they do the pull-ups wrong, but it's fine.
It's so true. The all of this stuff is the movie does such a, it feels like it still has integrity, even as it's going through the tropes of, oh, she's getting her life back together because like her, she's getting her life together in all these other realms because she's discovered this thing. But I think one of the reasons that for me, it feels like it owns it is back to what we were talking about before, that she, since she's had to work so hard, it feels like mm-hmm. these payoffs, like I know now why she might be putting more work into school, why she might be engaging in these things.
Right. Because
she's discovered a work ethic through Hector and mm-hmm. their work together and her ability to live up to his challenges and all of that stuff, that discovering that right. stuff in her spills out into the other parts of her life. And if the movie had just been, oh, look, you know, blink of an eye, she's a good boxer, and then went on to right. do all this stuff, I'd be like, yeah, I don't mm-hmm. know that I buy that.
I also just, I agree. I also want to add the potential positive effect to her overall mental health that finding a physical outlet would be, and finding having a goal. And so I would, I'm going to make the leap of the assumption that it's easier for her to focus on school.
Yeah, true.
Because she's getting kind of those other, she's working through some of that other stuff consciously and subconsciously because she has this other life.
That's a great point. So,
anyway, I love this movie. Really good movie.
Do you think this movie could get made today, or like what would it be different?
Yes.
What would be different today about this movie?
That's a good question. I mean, you mentioned that the how filmmaking has changed. Mm-hmm. So I think it would be, you know, made on an iPhone or something, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, if it's this small again, I think right. it would be kind of home done that way. How would it be different?
I wonder,
what do you think? You're more of an expert.
I wonder if this movie came out today, if it would get more attention. Or people would remember it more, maybe because it would stream on Netflix, or
sure.
you know, or it would be more sort of widely available than to play in a handful of smaller theaters that you and I go to see it a couple of times, and that's it. Because it made like 1.7 million in its domestic release,
right.
which is, you know, it made back its money, but it wasn't like it launched these two careers. So I don't mean to minimize it at all, but I have a suspicion that this movie was, both in terms of what it does with the character and the way it's made, is ahead of its time in a way. Mm-hmm. And if it might, at least this is my hope, that it would get more attention now than it got when it came out.
Sure. Yeah. I think there's just more discussion of smaller films. And maybe I'm wrong, but, you know, with social media and all the other ways that we're constantly talking, and like you said, Netflix with the other platforms, it could easily be an Amazon. I mean, there's.
Yeah. To be seen by more people, you know, that's to be available.
Yeah.
In
there's
more
a
places
of small fleet of movies on Amazon that I've seen because I was just scrolling through Amazon that I hadn't heard about anywhere else. You know, I mean, there's just, I think more
people content.
With devices using them. So much content in this golden age. And then I think about things like Eighth Grade and Lady Bird and other young female protagonist journeys that I feel like people are ready to go on.
Yeah.
So let's right here and now campaign for the re-release of Girl Fight.
Yes, I love it. Yes. Yes.
I guess we could wait another year and a half and it'd be a 20 years. Oh, God.
Oh, really? Oh, God.
We got old.
It's, you know, this, I mean, it's true. This movie has no Blu-ray.
Right.
And one of the reasons that I am sad that I lost the DVD is because I'm pretty sure there was a director's commentary on it. I'm really sure. In fact, I see now on here, I'm looking at it on Amazon. You could get it, the DVD, for $26 on Amazon. which I'm not going to pay for. I mean, I love this movie, but I'm not going to pay $26 for it. But I remember listening to the commentary. This is back when I had time to do that. Yeah.
Well, luckily, I'm your secret Santa, so I can make that happen for us both. Tobin, do you want to play a game?
I want to play a game so badly.
So, as we've mentioned several times, this movie came out in the year 2000, which is a while back. So, Michelle Rodriguez has been in our lives for a very long time.
Turns out.
So, Tobin, we're going to do honor system here. I'm going to assume you don't have any devices out.
Oh, okay.
Any research.
I will close my laptop here. Okay.
This game is called Michelle Rodriguez, who's older.
Okay. Oh my gosh. Okay.
And another disclaimer that I think all the folks listed in this list here are aging beautifully and getting better with age, like a fine wine or a hard cheese. And
not unlike ourselves.
Not unlike ourselves. So there's no shame. I'm not pointing it out to be anything other than noting that we are old. So Michelle Rodriguez was born in July of 1978, meaning that she only recently turned 40.
It's a good year, 1978.
It is a good year, a good vintage. So I'm going to list some folks who I feel like we've known a similar amount of time.
Okay. Okay.
That we have Michelle Rodriguez, we've been aware of.
Okay.
And you're going to tell me if Michelle Rodriguez is older or younger than these folks.
I love it. All right. I'm ready.
So let's start with, you know, someone we've known. Oh, it feels like forever. Drew Barrymore. Who's older?
Drew Barrymore is older.
That is correct.
Oh, phew. I second guessed myself at the last minute, but yeah.
Is 43.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
How about Rosario Dawson?
Oh, that's hard. I'm going to guess younger. Wait. Younger? Rosario Dawson is younger. That Michelle Rodriguez is older.
Okay. That is correct by 1 year. Ooh. 2 points already, Tobin.
Look at me.
It's 5 points to win, by the way.
Okay. Wow. Five to win? All right. Okay.
Yeah. All right. A Montana favorite, whether she claims us or not, Michelle Williams.
Okay. Michelle Williams has to be younger than Michelle Rodriguez.
Damn it, you're so good at this game. Who would have thought?
I'll tell you how I'm doing this when we get to the end.
Okay.
I'm not cheating, but okay. I'll tell you. Yeah.
Michelle Rodriguez was someone that, Tobin, you pointed out early on, and then her career flourished.
Mm-hmm.
There's a parallel here. Who is older between Michelle Rodriguez and Rashida Jones?
Oh, I think Rashida Jones is older.
Damn it. You're so good. This is a terrible game. You're winning. Okay. Tobin.
Yes.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer herself. Ooh. Sarah Michelle Gellar. Who is older? Michelle Rodriguez or
Sarah Michelle Gellar is older.
Damn it. Okay. How about this one?
Okay. I think that's 5 points, but let's keep going.
I just need you to get one wrong and then I'll
play till you stump me. Yeah.
Paris Hilton.
Oh, that's a tough one. I'm going to say Paris Hilton is younger.
You're right. Okay. Tobin, how about this? Claire Danes.
Claire Danes must be, Claire Danes must be younger.
Damn it. By 1 year. Oh, man. I mean, I have a couple of others, but you've won already. I also have a bonus round. So you've won the round. But
thank you for grudgingly awarding me the points there.
You won. Tobin won. Tobin did amazing.
I believe I have a perfect score in the main game.
It was a grand slam. No, I don't know baseball.
I've never done this before, we should say. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That's true.
I mean,
it's
like
the
one
power
game.
Of girl fight that's, okay.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
I've been training. I see the montages already. In honor of our friends at the network, And in honor of Michelle Rodriguez's next film and franchise, Fast and the Furious, I have a Fast and Furious edition. Bonus round.
Okay.
Who is older, Vin Diesel or Michelle Rodriguez?
Oh, no. I feel like this is a trick. I feel like I'm supposed to say Vin Diesel and it's going to turn out the other way, but I really do think he's older. So I'm going to say Vin Diesel is older.
You are correct. By how much?
Moving the goalposts a little bit, sports.
You've raised the bar.
By how much?
Yeah, how many years?
Less than 5 years.
Interesting. He's 51 years old.
Really?
Indeed.
Wow. Okay.
Tobin, who's older, Michelle Rodriguez or Fast and the Furious co-star Jordana Brewster?
Michelle Rodriguez.
Correct. By how many years?
2.
Correct. I hate you. How about everyone's favorite, Jason Statham?
Oh, man. He's got to be older.
Who's older, Jason Statham or Vin Diesel?
Vin Diesel.
They're both born in July of 1967.
Oh, wow. Okay.
They're both 51. Yeah. All right. We're at home stretch. Tyrese Gibson. Now, you didn't make it far in the franchise.
No, I don't know who that is. Yeah.
Oh, goodness. Well, then this is one for Twitter. Well, I guess if you're on your Twitter, you've probably Wikipedia'd already. So cheaters, one and all.
Tyrese Gibson, I'm going to say, is younger.
He is by 1 year. And finally, can you sweep the whole thing? Let's see. Oh, this is the final.
Okay.
Final countdown.
Okay.
There's the Eye of the Tigers playing. Who is older, Michelle Rodriguez or Ludacris?
Ludacris is older.
I'm done. Podcast over. We had a good run, but Tobin got too smart for me.
We are announcing this is our final episode.
Tobin, you got every one of those correct.
Wow.
How did you do that?
The dirty little secret to this version, not until we get to the Fast and Furious people, where I don't know half the people we're talking about, that Michelle Rodriguez is, we are within a couple months of the same age. So I then think back, okay, was when Claire Danes was playing in high school, how old was I when she was in my so-called life? So I think I'm just a little bit older than that, right? So I was able to just match based on my own life where people were. Yeah. And I knew in the back of my mind that I don't know if other people play this game where you like find out how old a celebrity is and you're like, oh, that's about my age. And, or that person's a little bit younger. And so, yeah, I just knew the answers, Aislinn.
That is amazing. You are a talented human, and I'm glad to know you.
Oh, I love that game.
I'm sure you do.
That game anytime.
But only with people who just turned 40.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Only people born in the spring or summer of 1978.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for destroying that game. Good work.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. Now is the time in our podcast where we decide if this movie is a step forward or a step back for fearless women in front of and behind the camera. Aislinn, what say you? Progressive
or
regressive?
Are you kidding me? This is an amazing film. This character is absolutely, you know, fearless and breaks all the rules and is not it's something we talked about. We have talked about previously when we've discussed this movie, but not in this podcast yet. It's a very complex sentence to get to it. Simple
we
point.
Have smart listeners, though, so they're with it.
There's no makeover scene.
Yes.
Right? So, you know, if we think about the year 2000, where we have She's All That already, we may or may not have Never Been Kissed right around that time. I mean, there's a lot of obligatory makeover scenes, and this movie says F that, we're not going to do that. She is transformed, but she's transformed from the inside out and is gorgeous the whole time and doesn't need a makeover. We discuss the relationship, how it helps illustrate the journey, but it's not I wouldn't say it's I mean, I guess it is pivotal but you know, the relationship, mm-hmm. the romantic part of it is not primary.
Right.
And that it was, the debut, their directorial debut, as well as acting debut for these two badass chicks. I love it. I say progressive, and I will fight anyone who disagrees.
Well, in that case, I'm going to say progressive as well. I couldn't say any of that better than you did. I would like to point people toward another podcast. Brian Koppelman is the screenwriter who is a showrunner of the show Billions, which Karen Kusama directed a couple of episodes of. He has a podcast called The Moment, and he interviews her in an episode from sometime last year. And it's a great interview, and she's fascinating to hear sort of the trajectory of her career. And so in lieu of re-singing the praises of this wonderful movie, an amazing debut, I urge people to go listen to that and to hear from the director herself. So I say progressive.
I will. Thank you for that.
Aislinn, what are we going to watch next?
Well, from saying I love everything, I need to say I hate everyone. the results of the poll are in. And coming in 2 weeks, on Christmas Damn Day, we'll be discussing The Babadook. Toby's laughing because I hate scary movies, but I'm going to do it for my art. I'm going to do it because I am a professional podcaster. Oh, wait, I'm not.
You do it because we love our listeners.
We do, and I appreciate everyone who participated. I assume that it was with great thought and sensitivity toward me that they voted this way, as I assume all people are doing things out of sensitivity to me. So, yeah.
That's going to be fun. Christmas Day, unwrap the Babadook. Hereditary, which was one of the other movies on the poll, was ahead for most of the time that this poll was up. And then the Babadook just slayed it in the last like 3 days.
And I was prepared for that because just out of my own curiosity, sometimes I'll go and read detailed synopses of scary movies just to mm-hmm. know what they were about. And I had read 2 on Hereditary. So I was like, oh, great. I already know what I'm getting into. I have read nothing about Babadook.
Oh, goody, goody.
A Babe in the Woods.
I've not seen it either. I'm coming in clean slate. So check back on Christmas Day.
Check
if you're looking for
out,
something
folks.
To do on Christmas Day.
Merry Christmas. Tobin, where can people find you?
People can find me on Twitter at Tobin Addington. Aislinn, where can they find you?
Cursing that I have to watch The Babadook, but on Twitter at SassyNerdMT. And you can find us on Twitter at Contenders_pod or on Patreon at thecontenderspod.com. We want to give a special thanks to our members who have joined at the marquee level or above. That includes Carly B, Sean Flynn, and Jeff Addington. Become a member today, connect with other listeners, and support the show we do.
We here at The Contenders are proud members of the Cage Club Podcast Network. You can explore all their great shows at cageclub.me, and you can keep tabs on all the Cage Club happenings over on Twitter at Cage Club Pod. As always, thank you so much for listening. I am Tobin Addington.
And I am Aislinn Addington. We'll see you next time on The Contenders. Become a member today, connect with other listeners, and support the show we do. What? I read the copy.
I know. It's the show we do. It's a really
fun. A weird phrase, and so I had to put a little sauce on it.
I love that you did that.